The government has rested. If you've put on a defense case, you've now rested. You've moved again for motion for judgment of acquittal, and it's been denied. There's no more evidence in the case. The only thing left at this point is closing argument. So this is your opportunity to explain to your fact finder why you should win, why your client is not guilty of these charges. So during this session, I'm going to talk about the closing argument. First, I just want to talk briefly about what a closing argument is and what it is not. Because what it is not is a longer opening statement. That's not what you're doing here. And you're also not giving just a summary of the trial. Every so often, you'll see a lawyer whose closing argument is just a repeating of what happened during the trial. This witness came in and said that. This other witness came in and said something else, and so forth. But remember, this fact finder, this judge, has heard all of the testimony. Your job is not to say this is what happened during the trial. What you're doing during closing argument is you are making an argument about why you should win. You are arguing about why the facts in the case, why the evidence, and why the lack of evidence can compel only one verdict in this case, a verdict of not guilty. Now, one of the hardest things about a trial and how you think about a closing argument is that when you get to that closing argument, there will be hundreds, in some cases thousands, of little facts throughout the trial. And during the closing argument, you're not going to talk about every single one of them. In fact, if you did that, it'd be probably a big waste of time. Many of the facts probably aren't relevant to any contested issue in the trial. Many of them may not matter at all. So the trick is to organize your closing argument so you're focused on the facts, the evidence, and the lack of evidence in the case that do matter. But you're not just going to be talking about them as in listing facts or listing ideas here and there. This isn't your opportunity to just get up there and say, these are all the really good facts for me, Judge. No, we're not doing brainstorming or listing. It's all about explaining why these facts, the facts you're going to talk about, compel the verdict of not guilty. And so if there's one piece of advice I want to leave behind, the one sort of trick into giving an effective closing argument, it's this. Anything you say during your closing argument, you have to imagine that your fact finder, your judge, is sitting there, and in response to what you're talking about, any fact in the case, any piece of evidence, any witness, they're thinking to themselves, well, so what? Why does that matter? And you need to answer that question. And that's what a closing argument is about. It's about taking the facts that are in the case, taking the evidence and the lack of evidence, and answering the question of, so what? This is why these facts show that my client is not guilty. You are persuading, and you are showing why the facts in this case have significance, why they matter. And that's what a closing argument is about. It's an argument in which you're taking two things, a fact or a lack of evidence in the case, and you're combining it with the discussion of its significance and why it matters. And that fact plus significance is going to equal a reasonable doubt in the case. There are different ways to do this, different ways you can take facts and argue its importance, its significance. But the one way you shouldn't do it, again, is just by listing facts. Don't get up there and say, it was dark out that day, and the witness had prior convictions, and the witness has changed its story about X. Because that's not going to do anything. That's just repeating things the judge already heard. The way I often do this is I like to use certain slanted questions or rhetorical questions as a way to introduce any reasonable doubt that I may have in the case. So, for example, in a mis-ID case, I may say something like, how can you be sure that my client was the robber when my client doesn't match the description given by the complainant of the robber, of the perpetrator? And then from that question, that slanted rhetorical question, I'll then discuss the facts. And you know, Your Honor, that the complainant never got a good look at the perpetrator's face because you heard it was nighttime and it was dark out and the person had been drinking and the person wasn't wearing her glasses. And so the fact that the witness, in this case the complainant, never got a good look at the face of the perpetrator has to give you doubt, a reasonable doubt, that it was my client who committed this robbery. That's just one example of how you might argue reasonable doubt. You're not just listing the facts that you've elicited during your cross, but now you're taking those facts and you're showing why they matter and showing why they compel a not guilty verdict. Another question you might ask is something like, well, how can you trust the word of this witness when this witness has changed his or her story over and over again? And then I would go on to say, you know that this witness has changed his story because you heard that on direct examination, the witness said that the gun was tossed with the left hand, but then you heard that the witness previously said it was with the right hand. And you heard the witness said the witness was 100 feet away, but previously the witness said 75 feet away or 50 feet away. And I'd go through all of those facts that support this question or this argument that I'm making. And that's the key. Now, it sounds simple, right? It sounds simple. All you have to do is take facts and argue about why they're important and what their significance is. But what makes it hard is that there are so many facts in the case. And so one of the biggest challenges during your closing argument is how you organize and structure it. And like everything else that I've talked about a trial, you don't have to follow the exact order or chronology that the government follows. It doesn't have to be organized chronologically, and it certainly doesn't have to be according to a particular witness. You don't have to first talk about the first witness that was discussed, and then the second one, and then the third witness. You want to make sure that during the closing argument, like in the opening statement, you are giving the fact finder, the judge, the lens to view it that's the one that's most favorable to your case. So, for example, no matter how long or how many witnesses were called, if in your view the case comes down to the credibility or believability of one witness, you want to structure your closing argument that way. You might say something like, you have to have reasonable doubt in this case because you have to have reasonable doubt to trust the word of Jonathan Smith. Jonathan Smith is the only witness who came into the courtroom and said that my client was the one who committed this crime. And so in asking the court to find my client guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, the court is asking you to believe this witness beyond a reasonable doubt. And then from there, you can go through all of the different reasons why you don't want to believe that particular witness. So that might be a way to structure it. But maybe you're going to do it more thematically. Maybe you have a few different witnesses and you want to show, not going specifically by a particular witness, but by a certain issue. And the first reason you have to doubt my client's guilt, Your Honor, is the fact that these witnesses, these main essential government witnesses, all have reasons to lie against my client. And say, here are the reasons they had to lie. Well, for this witness, it was the fact that they hated my client because they used to, you know, fight in school. For another witness, it was because my client is dating his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend. However you want to do it, but you can do it by theme. Or you can do it in a different way altogether. I mean, there are so many different ways you could structure it. But the trick is to figure out how you want to structure it and to drive home your arguments by answering the question about any fact, so what? Now, I'll talk briefly about sort of the different ways you might set up a closing argument from start to finish. First, you're going to want to have an introduction. Now, there are different ways you can start an introduction to your closing argument. One way is to simply, again, sort of like in an opening, just come out, declare that your client is innocent or not guilty. Again, I'll talk about that in a moment. But you can just come out and even state your theory again. And to say, you know, this is our theory of the case. I said at the beginning, and the evidence has shown that this is, in fact, what happened. So there are some people who start an opening statement by sort of talking about what happened as a matter of fact on the day of the incident. And, of course, what did happen, what you're going to be saying is that your client is not guilty or was not involved, whatever your theory of the case is. So that might be one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to say, to not so much focus on what did or did not happen, but to focus on certain themes in the trial. Could be that the theme of the trial was assumptions. You might start out with an opening about, this is the theme. You know, what happened to my client that day was all about assumptions. You know, the police saw him wearing a black North Face jacket, so they assumed that he was involved in this robbery. And then the complainant witness saw my client in police custody, also wearing a North Face jacket, so she assumed he was involved in this. But ladies and gentlemen, or excuse me, Your Honor, just because these people have assumed it does not mean that it is true. And then go on to talk about the reasonable doubt in this case. Now, during the closing argument, you can also talk about the law. And in front of juries, I think it is important to spend a decent amount of time talking about the law, to talk about the presumption of innocence, the burden of proof, and the reasonable doubt. Again, because that's the framework by which a witness or a jury is going to evaluate the testimony and the evidence. Now, the judge is presumed to know those things, so you probably don't want to spend too much time on it, but I still think that you should, in a bench trial, very briefly, make a point to say, you know, my client's presumed innocent, the burden rests exclusively with the government, and the government has the burden of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And you do that because that'll set up what's going to follow, which is, and here are all the reasons or reasonable doubts that exist in this case. And to go from there and to make your argument. And of course, you're going to be talking about a few different things during your closing argument. Obviously, you're going to be talking about the evidence in the case, the facts that were brought into evidence. And you can talk not only about facts in the case, but any inferences that are drawn from those facts. And evidence is simply going to be what somebody said, or what's introduced as a particular document, an object, even demeanor on the stand. That's all sort of evidence in the trial. And you're certainly going to talk about evidence in the case. Now, prosecutors, they speak almost exclusively about the evidence in the case. But there's something else that we defense attorneys should also talk about during our closing argument, and that is the lack of evidence in the case. Because in a closing argument, you are permitted, and I encourage you to do that, to talk about the lack of evidence in a case. And what allows you to do that? Well, the reasonable doubt instruction itself says that reasonable doubt is a doubt based upon reason, a doubt you can give based upon the evidence or lack of evidence in the case. So don't just confine yourself to talking about the evidence. Also talk about the lack of evidence in the case. It could be the fact that your client has no motive to commit the crime. It could be that there's absolutely no physical or scientific evidence that corroborates the claim that it was your client who did that. So talk about the evidence. Talk about the lack of evidence in the case. And as you make arguments, of course, you can appeal to common sense. In fact, you're supposed to do that. And in doing so, you can use analogies if you want. You can tell personal stories. You have a lot more leeway in closing argument to say or do things than you can during other parts of the trial. But again, like everything else you do or say, make sure it serves a purpose. Don't get up there and start telling stories just because you think you're entertaining or because you have this great story to tell. Make sure it furthers your theory of the case. But while you're doing the closing argument, and while you're going through the different reasons or reasonable doubts that exist in the case, and you talk about the evidence and the lack of evidence, one thing you must do in every closing argument is you must address any problems or weaknesses in your case. Or to put it another way, you must address the main points or arguments that the government, the prosecutor, is making. The prosecutor goes first, so you'll hear what the prosecutor is saying. So make sure you're paying attention to what they're saying so you can respond to the arguments they're making. And most likely what should happen in a trial is that whatever they're going to say, you will have anticipated it anyway. So when you've prepared your closing argument in advance of the trial, you'll know to take on these certain points. But if the prosecutor says something that you haven't thought about, that seems pretty important or seems pretty powerful, make sure you address it. And if the prosecutor misses something, if the prosecutor misses an argument that they should have made that seems pretty good for the government, I don't advise you to ignore it as well, because you better believe the judge is thinking it. So whether the prosecutor says it or not, make sure you address any weaknesses in your case or any strong points by the government. Don't ignore it. So after you do your introduction, you segue from the law briefly into your main section, your arguments, your reasonable doubt, your this is why the facts show my client is not guilty, discussing both the evidence and the lack of evidence. You've taken on the government's main points. You'll want to certainly have a conclusion, something powerful, again, because of this issue of primacy and recency. You always want to end with something strong. And like in everything else, it's not about how long you speak for. It's not about the number of words you use. Use your words carefully and sit down whenever you have said what you need to say. Now, in terms of execution, as with opening statement, you want to have it memorized, or in the very least, you want to make sure that you're not reading your closing argument, because you're just not persuasive when you're reading something. So please make sure that you know, and you'll know it, because you'll know your case inside and out. Now, it doesn't have to be as clean like an opening. You probably haven't gotten it down word for word. What I encourage you to do, what I found to be very helpful to me, is I actually write out an outline of my closing argument well before the trial ever starts. In fact, once I've selected my theory of the case, I'll write that outline of my closing before I do anything else. The reason I do that is because I want to make sure that what I'm talking about in my opening, the points I'm making during my crosses, and even what I'm doing when I put on witnesses, if I put on witnesses during a direct case, they're all going to be going towards arguments I'm going to want to make during my closing argument. So I do that because it helps me to prepare for the whole trial. But it will also help you because it gives you less work to do when you transition from the testimonial part of the trial to the closing argument. So once you have it, and you'll have it in front of you if you need it, but really try and make eye contact. And as with everything else, be passionate, not over the top, but show that you believe in what you're saying. Because if you don't believe it, you better believe the judge won't say it. And then when you finish your closing argument, you will hopefully, after the government gives its rebuttal, you will get the verdict that we love to hear, those two famous words of not guilty. So I should sit down now because I trust that that's what's going to happen. And make no mistake about it, defense attorneys, especially those who prepare hard in advance, do the necessary legwork, we win trials here in Superior Court and Juvenile Court. We win them all the time. Unfortunately, we don't win every trial. So I just want to talk very briefly about preserving issues for appeal in the event of a conviction. Obviously, throughout the trial, you're going to be making objections, or you should be making objections when you need to do that. And as I said before, you can just, to make an objection, you just stand up on your feet, say objection, and raise the issue. You can do it during the testimony or in between when there are breaks. Obviously, in advance of the trial, you should be filing motions to suppress evidence, to exclude evidence. A motion is simply your way of asking the court to do something. And you do those things, you make those objections, you file those motions for all kinds of reasons. The main one is because you're seeking to get something out of it. You're seeking something so you can win, to help you win the trial. But at the same time, you're doing it to preserve the appeal. Because if you don't file that pleading or make an oral objection, then it's going to be very difficult on appeal, even if there was some mistake that was made, to get the reversal. So also be mindful before and during the trial of making those appeals. And that way, if God forbid, you should lose the trial, hopefully you can get it back on appeal.